Hi everyone, welcome to TechMinds podcast. Here we discuss the most cutting-edge issues that are changing our world and how businesses can create winning solutions with technology. In this episode, we're going to discuss the epic transformation of healthcare. So if you are a CXO thinking of building a health tech platform, you'd love this discussion. Our guest today is Christine Jacob, the founder and managing director of DigiBridges. She is a health tech researcher at ARU Cambridge and an expert in user adoption and user engagement strategies. You can find the interview excerpts in our latest white paper. Please visit techmin.com for all our papers and podcasts. Thanks a lot, Christine, for speaking with us. My first question to you is, we have seen a lot of pandemic-driven change recently. What is driving the sea of transformation in healthcare today?
So I believe that what digital really changed and what's really fueling the transformation that we're seeing is the availability of the data. So digital tools, let it be wearables or apps or AI that we are using in hospitals, clinics, and that are in the hands of patients, are generating an unprecedented amount of data that we can now work with to create research, to personalize healthcare, to be more predictive. And now we see with the pandemic, for example, that this has really sped up. So we've seen a push towards such shift because now you have a contagious disease, you have the motive to actually be able to monitor people while they're still at home because you don't have enough beds, you don't want the contagion to come to the hospital unless it's really needed and all this sort of stuff. So the real shift that's happening here, it's this availability of the data. First, that we can passively monitor some data like the vitals of people through some wearables. We hope to see a little bit more push in that regard now. And also what people can input as self-reported symptoms that can help then their care team remotely manage their situation without having to bring them to the hospital or to the clinic. So it's really about this, the availability of this data in a structured way that's enabling us to, you know, understand the disease in a better way, be more predictive, and as a result, to manage it in a better way. Because if you can predict what's going to happen, then you can manage it in a much better way because you can really intervene earlier. You can have a more dynamic approach with the patients. They become part of their care. They're not just receivers of care. Now they can monitor, they can report, they can communicate, they can express themselves. So that's what I believe is the real dynamo behind the whole transformation that we're seeing. It's really the data. That's the backbone of the whole change.
Rightly said, data is the new oil and an invaluable asset. So do you see companies who are harnessing data would be the ones at the frontiers of healthcare innovation?
So definitely companies with experience in managing big amounts of data will be very competitive in this area. So we have seen, again, with the pandemic and with the push that we've seen with it, we've seen players like Google, like Apple, like Amazon are trying to, you know, get to this area because they already have solid years of managing vast amounts of data over the years, and now they want to get into the healthcare area. In my view, however, they do need the partnership with healthcare organizations in order to succeed. And we've seen, you know, conflicting reactions again in the pandemic time when they offered their technology for the tracking and tracing of the virus spread. Some governments were more skeptic than others, and some were, you know, more cautious with whether we give this data to those players or not. So whether it really happens will depend a lot on regulators, and it will be a country by country case in my thinking. Because it will be the government that would really either enable those big players to really come into that space and be the major players for the future, or the data privacy regulations will put some restrictions there. So if you still have those restrictions in place, then this would give some margin for the smaller players that are, you know, addressing very specific health needs that would then be collecting those data, those clusters of data for those specific patients that need their specific tool. And they would then need to really develop this capability over time. Again, we're still, at least here in Europe, we still need a lot of efforts in the regulations area when it comes to data privacy. And this really became very, very clear in the time of the pandemic. That was one of the most challenging things, like ethical dilemmas of where does, you know, people's freedom stop and public health management start, and how do you ensure that you're managing this successfully without invading people's privacy? And we have seen as well that some tools managed to do that really well by ensuring that they're only collecting the needed data. You don't really collect the people-specific data unless they test positive, the data stays on your mobile. But we have seen also other governments that would make this compulsory. We really have no choice. You have to give your data to the government. So I think it's really the regulations that will govern how this is going to develop and in which direction it takes. So you might, yes, you might see those mega players come into the scene and really govern the whole thing and be the ones with all their weight and with all their experience coming into the scene of healthcare and partnering with healthcare organizations and governments. Or it could also take another route that we have seen, at least here in Europe. I don't know about India. Maybe you can tell me more of how you really focus on, you work with researchers and you develop your own thing. You make sure that you're not over collecting data or anything to have this fine balance between what do I need versus how do I respect people's privacy. So I hope this addresses your question.
Rightly pointed out that regulations moving forwards would hold the key to wider adoption of telehealth.
Certainly. So regulations is super important for several areas. So data privacy is definitely one, but another mega part is the incentivization of healthcare organization, things like reimbursement regulations, for example. So what gets reimbursed versus what doesn't? So we've seen now a precedent in Germany, for example, that prescribable apps will be available to the patients, right? So healthcare now will be bound to reimburse those apps that make it through the approvals to be in that catalog that's available for patients. So clinicians would be able to prescribe you a health app. However, when you think about this first regulation, it's the first of its kind, and it's amazing, and it's very encouraging, but healthcare technology providers that are providing tools that are only directed to clinicians would not be able to benefit from it because it's only for patient-facing tools. So this is creating this incentive for the tools that are patient-facing or at least have a patient interface in them. However, the ones that are only for clinicians do not fall under this regulation. So when you look closely, you will see that, yes, it's one step forward, but still the specificity of it means that we still need to do a little bit more to incentivize clinics and hospitals to also adopt things like AI and the tools that help them with decision-making that are not necessarily part of such regulations yet. So that's another pocket that would certainly dictate the direction and also the scale of how those tools are being adopted. Because when you have national reimbursement, it's a countrywide reimbursement regulation, and your tool makes it to that catalog, then definitely that would play a role in widespread adoption. You're not, you know, just talking about pockets of adoption in small clinics or certain hospitals, but you're talking widespread adoption and something that can become the norm and part of regular care. So such regulations are also super important for the direction and for how this would develop.
Okay, so do you see 2020 as the year that puts technology-enabled focus on patient experience as customer experience holds in other industries?
That's a very good question. And I believe that it would really depend on where you live, because that depends a lot on how your insurance system is built. So in many countries, and that's the difference between healthcare and other, you know, consumer goods, where you can switch provider like this without really having any attachment. depending on your healthcare insurance cover, you might be bound to two specific providers, right? So this would mean that the patient experience focus can take a little bit longer to people that have basic insurance, that do not have the privilege of switching providers to go for someone that has a more competitive offering, meaning things like apps and tools that make my life as a patient easier. However, if you're privately insured in countries like Switzerland and in Germany, and you have the additional stuff, so of course you pay a little bit more, and then you have more options to choose who to go to or to go directly to a specialist instead of going to a GP and then being transferred to specific specialists, then in that case, you would have more options to switch, and only then the patient experience focus could shift, because only then clinics would be competing for those patients. But if patients are not given the choice to switch providers, then how would the shift towards a more patient experience happen? So we need a bit of a mindset shift to the whole system in this case, in a way that would enable patients to actually switch providers if they're not satisfied, which would fuel then the competition between those clinics and hospitals to attract the patients by offering them, you know, more personalized approach, more options, like things like telemonitoring and, you know, telehealth, and enabling them to have their consultancy, like their consults without having to come to the clinics. And we've seen that happen quite often during the pandemic, simply because you have a lot of chronic patients and you cannot just bring them to the clinics because you're increasing the risk of infection. So a lot of clinics that never had telehealth before started adopting this, which was amazing. But unfortunately, again, going back to the regulation point, regulation approvals in that regard were quite often temporary, meaning only for the pandemic time. So those clinics in a country like the US might not be able to continue offering this telehealth option after the pandemic because they wouldn't be reimbursed for it, because the approvals that happened on the insurance side were only temporary during the pandemic. So that shift towards a more patient experience and patient-centered approach needs really a mindset shift in the whole system, not only on the level of a clinic. And only the willingness of the patients to use mobile apps is not enough in some countries, because again, you're governed by your choice of provider. You can't just choose them as you will. So in my view, yes, the patient is probably ready to start using those, because we're using those tools everywhere else and we are expecting it from our healthcare providers. However, to incentivize clinics and hospitals to start providing this, it needs a shift in the system. So it needs a shift in the system from a competitiveness perspective and incentivization perspective, but also from a regulatory healthcare insurance perspective of what's being reimbursed versus not. Because there's a lot of clinics that are willing to make the shift and are willing to bring those tools on board. But if those systematic changes do not happen, then we might lack or we might miss this opportunity. And we've seen, you know, a lot of articles talking about the frustration that's being created from the temporary nature of such approvals, because clinicians are happy, patients are happy, but the system doesn't seem to support the shift yet, or at least not sustainably.
Rightly said, that as regulations become more progressive and flexible, there would be a rise in patient-centric approach to healthcare. So the next question I would like to ask you is, do you see that the advent of digital in healthcare has put the focus on outcomes and the value the care services are creating? So the next question I would like to ask you is, do you think that the advent of digital in healthcare has put the focus on outcomes and the value the care services are creating?
Yeah, I would certainly hope so. One thing it could help with incentivization and being more outcome oriented is that it makes it much easier to measure success and measure results, because you have better tracking, right? So yes, certainly it could help. But again, we do need a mindset shift there to move from patient care to healthcare, because medical training at the moment is really about fixing you with a pill. So you go to the doctor with a problem and they're trying to fix you. And it's really in very few cases where you see this holistic approach, multidisciplinary approach that goes across specialties, especially for people with chronic diseases or autoimmune diseases, where you have very complex cases that need this exchange, you know, and to be able to really measure the outcomes, you need this interconnectivity, because otherwise it doesn't really work, because the whole system is so connected inside the patient. And if it's just, you know, the separate specialists trying to fix their little part, then this outcome, this holistic outcome, is not going to happen. So what I believe would be revolutionary if digital health would really help with this multidisciplinary approach and this exchange to help medics move from patient care, waiting for you to get sick to try and fix you, to really healthcare, meaning looking at you as a whole and working together to ensure that you have better healthcare outcomes, instead of trying to fix the little bits and pieces and then ending up, you know, trying to just optimize the bill they're getting from the healthcare insurance company, as opposed to you being a healthier person. So it's a bit radical, my view here, but that would be my hope. You know, because we really see it quite often, this approach of, you know, trying to fix people and only looking at the little bits and pieces of their own specialty. But in reality, our beautiful system that is functioning together needs this harmony. And if I'm only talking to different specialists that do not see and put the puzzle together, then this real outcome and this really shift towards more healthcare approach versus patient care approach will not really happen. And I do believe that we have huge potential with digital tools to be able to do that. It really facilitates that, because you have better transparency, better measurement, better tracking. So it really makes the task much easier.
Thank you for this lovely point, that digital platforms aim at preventing people to fall sick rather than treating them. In the same vein, my next question is on personalization of healthcare. Is it unique to digital, or do you see that personalized healthcare services would add a lot of value in future?
So yes, definitely, this certainly helps. Of course, not in every disease area. So in some diseases, you need the personalization much more than others. So if you have a cancer patient, you know, that's taking a drug with high toxicity and they lose weight or they gain weight, you need to adjust the dose every time to ensure that it's, you know, it's adapted to whatever changes that they're facing. So that's a way of personalizing your treatment, right? So this has been happening for years. They had to, you know, in the clinic, they had to make sure that they're measuring all the different aspects. They are ensuring that they're giving the right dose and so on. With digital, of course, you have much better options and opportunities to do that, because first, you can have a more constant monitoring of what's going on. So you can really personalize the care. I've talked, for example, to one of the doctors in France that created a tool for lung cancer patients with an algorithm that would enable him to have constant patient monitoring, you know, for his patients between the clinic visits, which can be, you know, 3 months or 6 months, depending on the case. And thanks to the very simple algorithm that just captures unusual symptoms from those patients that are facing strange symptoms, he could bring those to the clinic earlier, take care of them to ensure that they don't go worse before the next visit. And the ones that were stable could prolong the period between the two visits. And as an overall, he achieved 8 more months of overall survival for his patients. And that's the beauty of personalization. So what did he do? He just made sure that one size does not fit all. 3 months is not one thing that works for all patients. You know, it doesn't have to be complex. It doesn't have to be blockchain and all the very complex technologies. It can be super simple and super achievable, and something that is as simple as just making sure that you're keeping an eye on those people between visits. So if something goes wrong for a specific person, even if not for the other, then you intervene on time. And I believe that, of course, with digital, you can really have much better personalization. Now, on a more sophisticated level, when you talk about rare diseases, where we don't have the capacity or the large amounts of data to develop some drugs, of course, digital can really help. And we have seen a couple of examples of hyper-personalization in research that have been done in MIT for people with rare diseases, where they could find drugs for those people in really very, very short timelines. So yes, I believe, of course, from its very, very simple sense of personalizing, as simple as just making sure that you're monitoring those people constantly, versus the more sophisticated approach of, okay, hyper-personalization and making sure that you're developing something that's super sophisticated for rare diseases, digital certainly plays a huge role.
My next question is on modes of care delivery. Keeping regulations apart, do you see new models of healthcare, for example, Walmart and Best Buy, becoming centers of care? Do you see the rise of innovation in care delivery models?
So it would certainly, I think, be most welcomed by so many parties. But again, going back to the regulations piece, it will be the one that will either make it or break it. So even if clinics and patients want it, but it's not going to be reimbursed, this could be a hurdle on the way, right? So things like reimbursement, but also data privacy management would be very important regulations that would dictate how we could proceed with something like this. But of course, from an experience, like from a user experience perspective, that's definitely where a lot of people want to move. And I would believe that seeing the statistics of satisfaction that we have seen in the pandemic from even clinics that haven't used things like telemonitoring and telehealth before the pandemic, they were delighted and they were happy and they saw that, okay, we can actually do this long term. But again, if the right conditions are not in place, they would be discouraged because they wouldn't want to just work for free. If it's not going to be reimbursed, then they will have to bring people to the clinics again. Now, in some specific research, we have also seen that, again, one size doesn't fit all. So it really depends on the condition and what sort of care are we talking about. Things like routine care and annual checkups and things like these, that where you don't really need to be in the clinic or in the hospital's office, in the doctor's office, it's fine to be able to do that remotely. But there are certainly specific things where you do need to be in the clinic, and that's why we always need to think about it with the specificity of the situation and of the need that we're trying to solve there. So always start with the need so that you would be able to predict better whether this is going to become the norm or not. So again, it will depend, of course, on the development of things like wearable and remote monitoring tools. If we have more sophisticated ones that we haven't seen yet that can be, you know, at your home to replace being in the hospital, maybe some even more specific cases will still be remote. But this is still for us to see then.
Now, coming to the core area of your research on the efficacy of mHealth applications, on which you have done extensive research, like today, we are seeing a lot of technology and investment interest in mHealth applications. And a lot of effort is being poured into making them. What suggestions do you have for companies who are developing mHealth applications to ensure success?
So I would say, first thing, a very simple advice, talk to your users. Because it's really surprising how many startups I come across that are about to, you know, launch a demo that haven't spoken to a clinician or a patient yet. And I'm always like, well, you might have very promising technology, you're brilliant minds, but without talking to the user, you might really shoot yourself in the toe. So it's a bit like, or in the foot. So it's a bit like, okay, talk to your users, engage with them early enough to make sure that you really know what they need. Because basics of what would succeed or not is usefulness and ease of use. So whenever you talk to users about adoption, the first thing they look at, is it useful for me? And is it easy to use? So first engage with them to make sure that it's useful, and that test it with them to make sure that it's from their perspective easy to use, because it might be easy to use for you as a techie, but not for them. So that's like the basics. Ensure that it's working, it's useful, it's relevant. You also need to widen your horizons a little bit to look into things like social and organizational aspects. So if you talk to clinicians, you need to make sure that your tool is fitting into their workflow, for example. It's not an additional task, because they are, in most countries, I haven't really spoken to a clinician that's not super stretched. So they are understaffed in most places, and they would not really adopt a tool that would add to their responsibility. So make sure that it's really fitting where they work. So it's really part of their normal day. It's not an add-on that they have to, you know, pay extra effort to ensure that it's happening, it's done. But also look into things like infrastructure. So things like EMR integration are key. And that's also one of the things that have been discussed thanks to the pandemic. Finally, governments realized, oops, we have systems that don't speak together. And the harmonization of hospital systems, but also ensuring that your tool speaks together with that system, is key again for widespread adoption among clinicians. Because the last thing they want to do is to sit at the end of the day to rework whatever they had in your tool and put it again in the system. So something that's connected to the patient system and that can be directly, you know, stored in the patient record would be the ideal scenario. So again, fit from that perspective, from infrastructure perspective, is key. But also understanding patients, the patient's side, and how patients tick, and how to really make it easy for them to use your tools. Because in many cases, especially in really hard conditions like cancer or, you know, with chronic diseases, you want to really fit into their daily life to ensure that they are adopting your tool. So understanding that disease area, how people think and how people feel, what they are suffering from, and how to ensure that you're catering to their very specific needs is key. So again, it's not a one size fit all. It's not, you know, a golden advice that will work for each and every tool. It's really about embedding those users in the heart of the development and making sure that every part is working together, making sure you're fitting into the workflow, making sure that you're offering them enough training to be able to use your tool. Are you offering them, you know, flyers, videos, and for clinicians and patients, not only about how the tool works, but how does it fit in the overall picture? So again, you need to sometimes talk to them about how to make this work into their workflow. So sometimes when I'm working on such tools and we're collaborating with the clinics, we sometimes try to give them advice of, okay, so you know what? You can look into the tool like 30 minutes in the morning and 30 minutes at the end of the day. You do this and this and this and that. This makes your flow through the day much easier. So it's not just about how the tool works, but some advice about how they could embed this in their daily work without having to suffer from another burden that they have to deal with. And for the patients, in also explaining to them and ensuring that your tool also have those features that they can, you know, share the data with their care team or caregiver, that they could store it, that they could see the patterns and compare them. The data entry is very easy for them. It's not something that they have to think about. Sometimes, you know, it's just about finding the buttons and about font size, and it's really silly stuff that make people actually drop out of using. Like in one of the cases, we've done research and we realized that people would go through the app and then in one specific screen, they just drop out. And when we did user research, we realized that it's just that the designer used a design that looks like a PowerPoint hive. So people thought it's just a visual, it's not buttons that they can click. And sometimes it's just as simple as just talking to them, you know, and making sure that it's from their eyes, it's working and it really functions for them.
I think these are amazing insights to be kept in mind while designing health app applications? Which areas of healthcare do you see have reached an inflection point in 2020? Because many areas possibly could see regression to the old normal.
I believe it would most probably be AI. So once we achieve certain levels with artificial intelligence that enables us really to harness the potential of the huge amounts of data that we're generating, there won't be turning back. So once, of course, we figure all the data privacy related issues and all this sort of stuff, so we can really deal and really work with this data in an aggregated way that enables us to see the patterns better, understand, better manage, and better predict and have a more preventive approach, I think that would be certainly a turning point where there will be no going back. We're still struggling a little bit for different reasons, and one major part of it is definitely the regulations, because being able to mine the data is not, you know, something that everyone can do. So even if you have access to it, because it's your own tool, sometimes, you know, you have to really respect specific rules. You can't have access to all the data. If it's, you know, if you can recognize the patient from the data, then you can't really play with it, and all this sort of stuff. So we still have, again, a very important regulatory part to be figured out there. But again, from a technology perspective as well, once we have more stability from an AI perspective and ensuring that we're training the algorithms in a steady way that's also not so scary, because we've seen also AI do weird stuff and Google shutting down servers because the AI started a new language. They learned a new language and they started speaking together without the developers understanding what's going on, you know. So there are some areas where we need to address some ethical stuff as well. AI bias, again, because we are biased as researchers, and whatever we feed into that AI becomes the AI bias that we see. And we've seen, again, we've seen Amazon had a program for HR and they had to cancel it because the AI was biased against women because it was fed data that made males look more attractive as candidates. So the AI said, well, if historically they hired more males, they must be better, right? And it started discriminating against women and they had to shut down the program. So it's all those things with AI that we still need to figure out from the technical perspective and from the development perspective, but also, of course, from the regulatory perspective. But as soon as we figure that out and we have a better grasp of it, I believe we will really, it will be like a turning point that you cannot just stop.
Thanks a lot, Christine, for being with us and sharing these amazing insights. A lot of companies and hospitals who are designing or thinking of digital transformation must keep your suggestions in mind. Thanks a lot for listening to this podcast. Our guest today was Christine Jacob, Switzerland. You can get the excerpts of this podcast and of other global thought leaders on our white paper. Stay tuned to TechMinds podcast for more cutting-edge topics and analysis. Visit us on techmint.com.